You might go ahead and turn to Psalms 127. I made a mistake right out of the gate. When I was doing my copy and pasting of scriptures and putting them into my notes, I left verse 5 out, and I told Cody incorrectly. I really wanted to talk about raising children tonight, and I wanted to start with Psalms 127, 3 through 5, not 3 through 4. So, I'm going to turn there, and let's read 3 through 5. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Several years ago, because those of you might not know it, I've been going here since I was 18, so I can talk about history going way back. But when Lisa and I were young adults and newlyweds, and many of you were right in there with us, and we were having a lot of children here, we had as many as 60 children in this congregation at one time. You can imagine that it took a lot of work to figure out where to put 60 children in the four or five classrooms that we had at the time. It was a good problem to have. And now those babies they're about to graduate, or they're in high school, or they're in college. Some of them are married. Some of them are having babies of their own. We went through kind of a time here at Prattmont where there was a little bit of a lull in the baby-producing department. But, you know, things are picking up. And so I thought it was good to talk about rearing children. This congregation has been blessed to have several families currently expecting babies, or maybe they've had a baby in just recent times. It's a very happy time, and it's one that I think deserves encouragement. With that in mind, let me kind of explain to you that while Brian this morning said that he created his sermon in just a matter of a few hours, I've been working on this sermon for 24 years. I really have. I've been driving down the road, and I've been preaching this sermon for 24 years. But I just didn't have enough gray hair or enough baldness in the back to really have any confidence to stand up here and present it. I want to tell you about what happened when Lisa and I were very new parents. We had Andrew, and he was a little over 2, and we had Sarah, who was just a little under 1. And we had a gospel preacher and his wife, not Brian Elliott. And they were visiting at our house. We had a meal, and afterwards, visiting, the wife made a comment to us. They had grown children, and she was admiring this 2-year-old and this not yet 1-year-old. And she said, with the best of intentions, she said, "I don't know how anyone can expect to raise children to be Christians this day and age." That really bothered me. It still bothers me today. It's been 24 years. And it still upsets me. And so that's why we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about. She felt that parents would not be able to make an appeal to serving God in a time because the world had become such a distraction, and it was so evil, it was just full of temptation. And that was 24 years ago. And what's it like now? So my purpose in being in front of you tonight is to do exactly the opposite, is to tell you that you can do it. It can be done. And we're given the way to do it. So let's start by talking about the condition of the world. What is the condition of the world? That's what her premise was that the world was just such a corrupt and vile place that it was a hopeless cause. You turn on the news and you watch it, and it's nothing but bad news and discouraging things. And, you know, maybe they'll devote a minute and a half at the end of it for a heartwarming story about a dog. But after that, I mean, there's not much encouraging. The condition of the world is just not any different than it's ever been. We look at Genesis chapter 6, starting in verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was on evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And then turn over to chapter 7, verse 5. Noah did according to all the Lord commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the flood waters were on the earth. So Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives went into the ark because of the waters of the flood. The world was so wicked that God was ready to destroy all of mankind and all that he had created and to start over with Noah and his family. One of the things that I think is important to note in that is that Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. In a time when the world was at its such height of evilness that God was willing to destroy it, Noah was able to be successful. Noah and his wife raised three sons who were qualified to go into the ark. And so I just don't think that we're living in a world that's any more evil. It may be just as evil, but it's not any more evil than what Noah found in his day or at any other time in history. I've got some passages here in Ecclesiastes. Solomon declared how evil the world was in his day. A reading through Ecclesiastes in chapter 4, verse 3, 5, 13, 6, verse 1, 9, verse 3. All of those verses, he's talking about how evil it is, the wickedness that prevails. But he also says it's not new. It's the same as it's always been. The verse I want to read is Ecclesiastes 1, starting in verse 9. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. It was as it's always been. The world is just an evil place. That's where we live. Your parents, they raised you in an evil world. They did. Some of you had adversity to overcome. Some of you had, you faced your own battles in living in an evil world. And as parents, you don't want your children to face those same battles. And I get that. What we have to recognize is that we haven't been called to live in this world. We have been called to live for Christ. We look at Romans chapter 12, verse 1. Romans chapter 12, verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We know how that works. We know that we're transformed through our obedience to God. Even just this morning, in our Colossians class, we talked about this same process of being dead to the world and living for Christ. We're transformed to be better people, to be better employees, to be better employers, to be better husbands, to be better wives. We're transformed even to be better parents. It's part of that following God's will. Well, there are passages, and we're going to get to quite a few tonight, that talk about direct statements about raising children. You're going to raise children, do this. We're also going to talk about some passages that don't say, when you're raising children, do this. But they're just as applicable to raising children as they are to other aspects of our lives. So we're going to talk about both types of passages. We're going to read them, see what that principle is that's being taught in it, and then I'm going to do my best to make some practical application and how those may be applied in our roles as parents. So the first thing that I think we need to recognize, and there's 4 points tonight. The first thing is we need to teach them about God. I think that's a primary responsibility. And so here are some passages that talk about the fact that we need to teach our children about God. Joshua 24, verse 15. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Many of us have this written and pasted in some prominent place in our home because it's so fitting. Joshua is making that declaration that in this house, we're going to know about God and we're going to serve Him. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, and you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. As parents, we can lead our children to sin, or we can lead them to the Lord, as this Ephesians 6:4 passage talks about. You want your child to know that God is the primary thing in your life, and that it permeates through everything that's in your life. And of course, you know, that means faithful attendance. That means demonstrations of doing good for others. Prayer, obedience to God in your life and through your diligence in your workplace and just in general, all the things that are part of your life, and including instruction in the Bible. Formal, organized Bible study, it's absolutely necessary. And we're very fortunate that what we have here is opportunities at Prattline. There's 2 formal Bible classes every week. We have 2 worship periods where good lessons are presented that many can understand that are even young. We have meaningful sermons with prayer and singing in our worship service. Now, you may have even daily Bible reading and study in your own home. And these are all very good. They're absolutely essential. I do want to advocate just one word of caution. And that's to strike a balance in your home between formal studies and opportunities to teach without it being so much a classroom setting. That you have opportunities to teach in so many things that happen in your family. Things that would just be just a simple, organic development of a discussion. Just discussions that naturally occur. I can't tell you how many times, just sitting at the dinner table, you know, the conversation began talking about something that happened today. Something that happened in the school. One of the children's teachers said something, or they studied a particular topic, and the next thing you know, we're talking about Bible things. The conversation just organically moved from talking about a current event to talking about something that was of spiritual significance. And as the children got older, I was impressed to see that sometimes it was them that brought the conversation from talking about something of just, this is what happened today, to talking about something that was of spiritual significance. It may have been through the observation of what would have made the situation better, or thoughts about why God has directed us in a different direction. Maybe it just reminded us of an event that's recorded in the Bible. Whatever the case, we ended up sitting around the dinner table and talking about God's will for us. I guess my fear in raising children has always been that I would force it on the child to the point that the child rejected God, or I would go the other way and I would neglect it to the point where the child had no interest in it. And so I thought here is just that if it permeates everything in my life, then it's just going to naturally flow that I'm talking about God, I'm talking about His plan for us, just in the things that happen in our everyday life. Even in sporting events or recreational activities, we've had opportunities to teach the children. David Mills will remember years ago when my boys were young, the NCAA Division II World Series was going on. And we enjoyed going to those games. We enjoyed going to those games with other Christians. And we would be there. We've been on camping trips with other Christians. And those aren't church activities. Those are family activities. And yet, without ever quoting a scripture, those opportunities were demonstrating to our children that we'd rather be surrounded by Christians than the world. We'd rather hear a corny joke than a dirty joke. We'd rather dress modestly than fall victim to the fashion dictates of the world. We'd rather keep our speech clean than to use foul language. Again, those things don't replace Bible study. My point is not that, well, we don't have to study the Bible. We'll do all of it. It takes both. It's meant to say, be sure to supplement those formal settings with those informal opportunities. Teach the children about God in everything we do. I think we need to show them God. And it's really very closely akin to what I've been talking about, but just to make some distinction here, there are some passages I want us to look at. James 1, verse 17. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Hebrews 13, 8. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. John 14, 15. If you love me, keep my commandments. Proverbs 29, 15. The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Children imitate. Now, Stone's off at college, but when Stone's at home, have y'all ever seen Stone walk up here to lead a song? He walks just like James. Children are going to imitate us. They will say things in the same way that we say them. They act the same way we do oftentimes. They learn to talk because they're listening to us. A surefire way to negate all the good that we do in teaching the Bible in these formal classroom settings or sitting down with our children and talking about God and talking about biblical things, a way to ruin all of that is for you to behave one way at home and a totally different way when you're in public. If you laugh at one thing at home, but you're appalled by it when you're in public, you've messed up. Consistency is required. How does the child know what acceptable behavior is? If at home what they do is funny, but then when they're in Walmart, they're getting a spanking for it. We're sending this mixed signal. Raising children is too important a job to be inconsistent in it. What you're doing is, when you are showing that you serve God, I'm going to put it this way, even when no one's looking, you know what I mean by that. You're showing that you submit to authority. That you recognize the authority of God and you submit to it. You're teaching your children to submit to authority. And they learn to submit to your authority. And as they get older, they learn to submit to God's authority. And that's what we want them to do. We want them to learn to submit to God's authority. But if at home, you're not willing to behave, you're not willing to submit to God's authority, well then why should they? Why would they have any reason to show any interest in God? So teach them by example. And somebody out there might be thinking, Lamar, you just don't remember what it's like. Yeah, I do. You might be exhausted. And if you're exhausted, you're probably doing it right. It's an exhausting job. You know, it's not wrong to take an occasional break, get a babysitter, and have some free time for a short while. But parenting is a full-time role. You can't just simply say, you know, when I'm at home and I'm there, I don't want to be a parent. You don't get that really opportunity to do that. We all have to remember that children are the best judges of hypocrisy. Being inconsistent promotes bad behavior, and worse than that, you're showing them a different you at home, one that does not honor God. They will quickly learn that your worship is in vain, all your teaching is for nothing. They will not respond to a do as I say and not as I do approach. They will know that you really don't care about spiritual things. And I'm afraid that when they grow up, that they'd have little reason to continue to look to God for authority. The third and fourth thing that I want to talk about, I started to make it one thing. But due to the amount of things I want to talk about, I made it two things, but it's sort of one thing. And that's why I put it in parentheses. We could call this Show Them Love. Everything I'm about to talk about is about loving your children. And if you're going to love your children, one of the things you're going to do is you're going to correct them. Let's look at some passages that deal with that. Proverbs 29:17. Correct your son, and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Amos 3:3. Can two walk together unless they are agreed? Luke 6:31. And just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise. When you're parenting, you and your spouse need to be together. You need to do this on the same page. Dad can't be slipping around letting things go, and mom's trying to keep things in check. We're sending confusing messages. So I say that. And I also want to get something out of the way, just right out of the gate, that there's nothing wrong with a properly administered spanking. From these and some previous passages that we read, God actually expects it. It's something that needs to be done. It needs to be done properly. It's not something meant to leave a scar. It might redden the skin temporarily. It probably will hurt feelings. And frankly, that's what I want it to do. I want it to hurt the feelings. And so subsequently, you can bring things in check. Lisa and I used it, the children will say regularly, as a part of our raising our children. So, for the purposes of this discussion, you know, what's a spanking? Well, that depends on the age of the child, doesn't it? Because it could be a pop on the hand. It could be, you know, a couple of smacks on the seat. So, spankings, when properly done, are important, and they need to hurt the feelings of the child more than anything else. But again, it's all about balance. These passages talk about don't spare the rod. Well, you know, if every time the child walks by you're smacking him, what good did that do? It has to be coupled and used appropriately. So, when thinking about balance, every punishment doesn't need to be a spanking. It needs to be somewhat appropriate. In the very early days of our parenting, Brian, I wonder if you'll even remember saying this. It made an impression with me. Very early days of our parenting, they were young parents, we were young parents, and as young parents are wont to do, we were sitting around talking about what? Parenting and raising children. And we were talking about spanking. And Brian made the observation that stuck with me is that there are two occasions, and we practice this, two occasions that absolutely demand a spanking. And that was one, when the child's was personally at risk. The child's going to be hurt. And number two, the child being defiant. So, example number one, child's about to touch a hot stove or walk into the street or running with scissors. Those are things that deserve some corporal punishment. If our very young child, or maybe sometimes our not so very young child, would talk disrespectfully, blatantly disobey us, we say that you're not to do that. We make it very clear, and they go ahead and they do it anyway, just despite us, really. Those things deserved the spanking. There are other types of disobedience. Poor judgment on their part wouldn't necessarily get a spanking. It was dealt with. It was corrected. But it could be done through having to sit and not play with others for a short period of time, or maybe a restriction of privileges. I had a parent one time tell me that, not a parent here, a parent tell me one time that, well, they couldn't put the child on restriction because the device that they were going to use for the restriction, the child bought it. I said, no. And I told the person. I said, you're bigger than they are. Take it away. Go lock it up. I'll tell you a funny story real quick. Andrew's about 7, 8 years old. He saved up his own money, and he bought a PlayStation. And then later in life, he's probably about 10, and he got in trouble. And Lisa put him on restriction, said, you can't play your PlayStation for X number of days. Later, Andrew came to me, and he was very polite, and he was very respectful, but he didn't understand. And he asked me. He said, I'm not trying to get out of the punishment. I know that I've got this many days, no PlayStation. I get that. But it's my PlayStation. And I said, okay, that's fine. You can have your PlayStation back, but you can't plug it into the wall because it's my electricity. You're bigger than they are. You can make it work. You're the parents. You get to make the rules for your house. The child doesn't. So y'all come together as spouses and make the rules for your house. Make them to be in alignment with God's rules. And those rules are opportunities to teach God's will. Because it's really about respecting authority. Punishment of any type needs to include instruction. This is what you did wrong, and this is the correct way of handling it. And as the child gets older, well, it needs to be a conversation. Very young children, they have a hard time expressing themselves. I get that. But the child gets older, give your child an opportunity to speak in that process. In a story that a friend of mine, a gospel preacher, told me, that when he got up to be older, he said, well, I skipped a part. I should have said that he was one growing up. He had many of those, son, we need to talk opportunities. And as he got a little older, he noticed that his dad would always bring a banana to the conversation. And he said that you could count on it. His dad would say to him, tell me why you did whatever it was he did. And then his dad would slowly peel that banana and he would eat it while he talked, trying to get himself out of whatever trouble and usually working himself right back around to, I really shouldn't have done that. It was when he got older that he realized that his dad was bringing the banana for his dad's benefit. Because his dad was really the kind that would want to kind of jump in too quick and talk too much. So his dad would eat the banana to keep him quiet while he gave his son an opportunity to talk. I think that's important. Take time to listen to the older child. If you have boys... Boys may not talk to you. They come home from school and say, how's your day at school? Fine. Did y'all do anything fun? No. Just as a tip, and I have boys and girls, so Sarah, she'd come home, she'd be right away. But just as a tip, get your boy involved in some activity. Something, throw the ball. Shoot baskets. Get them doing something physical. And as you're doing something physical, slowly begin a conversation. And now we're doing this or we're doing this, and they'll start talking to you. So that's just me talking. That's just personal advice. Punishment needs to be consistent. In preparing for this lesson, I asked several people this question. Give me an example of a parent being too strict. I have yet to have anybody give me an example. I haven't come up with one yet. And I think the reason why we struggle with this is because even though it's a phrase that we use, it's a phrase that kind of doesn't make sense, because strict means to be consistent. Strict means to be dependable. Strict means to be unfailing. So are you too consistent? Are you too unfailing? Are you too dependable? How can you be too strict? I think what we mean is we mean too severe. We see some punishment that is administered, and that's just the way we put it. We say that was maybe too strict. Well, likely it was too severe. And the reason why we say that, the punishment as parents, we need to think about this, that the punishment needs to fit the transgression. We talked earlier about there's not a need to spank And there is a need to spank, and I'm not backing up from that position. But I am cautioning that we need to control our reactions. That even this morning, and back to that Colossians class, man, we've hit that. Brian's sermon talked about Colossians class. I'm talking about the Colossians class. But one of the things that we needed to put off was anger and wrath. And Chad even talked about how that wrath is that outburst type response. So we need, don't be too quick to administer the punishment. Maybe a little bit of thought needs to be thought about. You know, if an otherwise obedient child, they don't make their bed today. Well, you know, maybe all that needs is a, hey, would you please go take care of that? And that may be the end of it. If the child becomes habitual in failing to do what you have said, yeah, you're going to want to escalate that punishment. But if on the first offense, your reaction was to go to the most severe punishment that you can administer, well then if the child continues that behavior, where do you go from there? You have no place to escalate the punishment. So start with a punishment that fits the offense and work up to something that fits a more deserving if it's necessary. So on that thought, I had a note here, just don't overreact just to make an impression on the people around you. Just as we discussed earlier, if it's wrong at home, then it's wrong in public. If it's wrong in public, it's wrong at home. And if we're practicing this, I think the occasions of public disobedience are going to decline. So coupled with showing them love, and in the same vein of correction, we need to praise them. It's vitally important. If all they're getting is just the negative, you did this wrong, you've got to stop, and there's no, we're not ever complimenting them and telling them how great a job they've done or when they've done a good job, say that's a good job, then we're not giving them everything that they need to see. I jumped ahead. We need to read our verses. 1 Thessalonians 5:14. Now we exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, uphold the weak, be patient with all. Hebrews 3:13. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Matthew 6:33. But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So just as important as correction, just as important as saying, no, you didn't do that right, and I need to help you learn how to do it correctly, your child needs to hear that they did it right and to compliment them. Even in the smallest thing. And the reward doesn't have to be some great thing. It can be a hug. It can be a high five. It can just be a smile. They need to get that reinforcement that in a positive direction that they're doing it right. You're setting the expectation up front when they do it right. You know, Paul did this in his writings. You can see that in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. He writes to them telling them of their confidence, of their obedience when they were gathering their financial support for Judea. Be interested and involved in the things your child is doing. And it's just another way to praise them and to demonstrate that you have the best expectations for them. Whether it's baseball or softball or football, band, a robotic competition, chess club, be involved in what your children are doing so that you get that opportunity to demonstrate Christ first in all that you do. It sets the right expectations. And again, the theme of the night is balance. You know, if we're so focused on how great they're doing athletically or how great they're doing in their music or how great they are in the chess club, is that what's primary? What's primary is their service to God. How well are they executing their service to God? We focus on grades. We want our children to do great in school and to have those wonderful grades and be prepared for scholarships, and that's important. We did the same thing. Don't lose sight of what's primary, of seeking first the kingdom of God. You'll find opportunities to have discussions with your children about God if you're with them, if you're involved in the things that they're doing, and you'll have the opportunity to represent Christ in all those times and all those locations. Just as a side note as I conclude, don't ever accept when someone tells you with the best of intentions, "Boy, enjoy them now." Because you know what that implies to me is that you're not going to enjoy them some other time. I've gotten old enough now, all my kids are in their 20s. There hasn't been a time that we didn't enjoy them. We enjoyed them at every stage of their lives. It was a pleasure to serve God in raising children and to get an opportunity to teach them and to show them how Christ is supposed to live in our lives. Enjoy them all the time. So, even though we talked about 4 points, there was kind of, I told you, it was really 3 points. Teach them about God. Show them about God. Love them. Love them in correction. And love them in praise. So tonight's lesson hasn't been one to convince anyone to render obedience to Christ. There may be someone here tonight who does know what is required. Being obedient to the will of God and the things that you do in your life, being ready to put off that old man, to accept the responsibilities of service in Christ. If there's somebody here tonight who needs to do that, we'd want to give you that opportunity as we stand and sing.